Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Before we get going today on the podcast, I want to direct you to a video version of Coach and Coordinator. We have five of those going up each of the next 5 weeks. We're calling it Film to Field Friday, and we're focusing on the five fights philosophy of our advanced tackling system. What we're really doing is showing you how to evaluate and grade the tackle and how you can take that data that you get through your evaluation, which you would do in your huddle system, how you could take that and turn it into a practice plan. We even talk with the coaches who we have on about how that works into a game plan. So we're showing huddle video. We're illustrating different things. We're actually showing some drills, talking about some of the fixes for concerns and areas of deficiency we've found in there. Please check that out at blogs.usafootball.com. We have the grading sheet in there, and that directs you to some of the different drills within our free shoulder tackling system. And you'll start to see how exactly this works. I promise you, you won't look at film the same way after you go through this series of videos. Again, check it out at blogs.usafootball.com.
Welcome to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast. I'm excited to be joined today by University of South Dakota defensive coordinator and safeties coach, Travis Johansson. Travis, it's great to have you here.
It's great to be on, Keith.
Travis, you're young in this profession, but have gained a lot of experience along the way. So talk to us first, though, about your start in coaching and what was it that really was the decision maker for you to go into this profession and be a college football coach?
Yeah, I think, it's nice to be called young. My wife didn't say that all the time, but when I got started, I got really lucky. I played at Concordia University, Division II school in St. Paul, Minnesota. And when I got done, I think like a lot of guys, I just wanted to stay around the game. I just didn't know what to do with how football had been part of my life forever. And you know, obviously, coaching was the closest thing to playing. At that time, nobody was looking for a 5'11", 190-pound linebacker to use professionally. So obviously coaching was kind of my avenue to do that. And I played for a coach at the time, Coach Mark Maurer, who gave me a chance to get in. I started student assisting for a semester, kind of getting on track to, do the normal graduate assistant deal. And one of our other coaches at the time, while I was in that phase, decided to get out and kind of do his thing in a private world. And there was an opening, and he asked me to come on full time before I was even graduated from college. So, of course, little did I know, I just said, yep, and jumped on board. And been coaching ever since. Lucky enough, I kind of worked myself up from there at Concordia, just as a position coach and to a coordinator. Then we had a change in staff, got let go there, like everybody's experience, and some point in time, and ended up at Grandview University, NAI in Iowa. It was an unbelievable experience. Won a lot of football games, a national title, a bunch of league titles, and it was a really, really neat place, hard place to leave. And then immediately after that, and now here at University of South Dakota. So, it's been fast, but each place has been unique in its own way at a lot of different levels.
As you look back at those experiences, what would be maybe a couple of those key lessons in developing as a coach that you point to have really become part of who you are right now?
Well, I think, the one that really, more than anything, kind of shaped me. One, I've learned that you certainly don't know it all. I think when you're a young guy going through it, you always got your own ideas and the way you go about it. When you actually, sit in that chair and got to make some of those decisions, you find out real fast. You certainly don't have all the answers, and to lean on expertise is something that you should really seek after. And I did that a lot. As I kind of found out the hard way, lost our head coach at Concordia and ended up kind of having to go in a different direction, you know, essentially getting let go. I think, you know, one of those scenarios, you go through that once and you learn a lot about, you know, how you need to, make sure you're really on your P's and Q's all the time, you know, so you're really marketable a lot. And that's straight me into, you know, taking each position you're at and job you're at for what it is, and taking advantage of all these opportunities. And so I think, you know, looking back, you know, just really understanding that you're constantly a learner, and regardless of how much people might like what you're doing or how you're doing it, that you're always continuing to evolve and change and learn. And I think, you know, that's helped me quite a bit.
Coach, you've become known for your approach to and how you think about defense, and we're going to dig into that in a little bit. But before we do, I want to think a little bit more in terms of, you know, I think everybody talks about the buzzword culture right now. And, you know, looking back at those things and now being the defensive coordinator at South Dakota, certainly you're going to be aligned with, you know, the program philosophy and what you do there. But every unit, whether that is an offense or a defense or every position unit, kind of has their own little twist to meet the needs of their players and get those guys aligned within the culture. So when you're looking at how you build that defensive unit, what are the pillars that you guys are going to build it upon?
Well, I think everybody wants, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, to find guys with the character of competitiveness and toughness, I think is the kind of the word everybody uses. I think of toughness more as willingness. I don't think anybody that plays this game has decided to play this game at this level isn't tough. I think some guys are more willing than others, and getting guys to be willing is kind of our job as coaches. But, you know, competitive, tough people, I think first, this is a game about people, not necessarily about X's and O's all the time. And then we talk a lot about, you know, design, just kind of how we talk to our kids around accountability, you know, not having this be about us. This isn't a coach's game. It's a player's game. And, you know, we really dig into these guys about explaining to us what you want to get out of this. And, you know, luckily enough here at South Dakota, you know, Coach Nielsen, our head coach, has won multiple national titles. You know, I had the opportunity to win a national title. I've been around coaches that have done that and seen what it takes. And, you know, I think we can speak on that for these guys, lucky enough. And they say things like, we want to, you know, win at this level. We're going to set the bar up there and show them what that looks like. You know, then it's on our guys. And essentially, it isn't so much about what we want to do. It's about what they want to do, and recruiting guys that really want that genuinely and aren't afraid to back it up when those challenges presented in front of them, when we do set that bar. And so, you know, accountability from the standpoint of, we're going to hold them accountable to their own goals, not to ours. You know, we're going to coach, you know, a lot of different football teams and a lot of different players. This is about their experience. What we want them to have out of that is kind of irrelevant. And so, you know, we let them, you know, show us their goals and what they want to do, and then we're going to show them what that takes. And I think you got to have tough and competitive people to have that sense of accountability. And I think we do here for sure.
I know in the last week, it's become a bit of a debate, and I know there's been a lot of coaches upset with the NFL banning certain drills and the idea that, you know, you're making our sport soft. I'm fully of the belief that a drill is not what makes a guy tough. And in fact, I think you're making a big mistake in today's day and age if you're putting toughness on a drill, especially if you don't have that direct game application. But for you, let's define toughness and the things you're looking for, and I guess, what is it that makes a player in your eyes tough?
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't think, you know, I think that word is, Keith, is so overused. You know, I mean, you're strapping that lid on every day and shoulder pads, and you're going out playing this collision sport, you're tough.
Yes.
And are you more physical than the next guy? Potentially. You know, I tell guys all the time, you know, when we're talking to coaches, I'm like, hey guys, these guys are tough. You know, I guarantee you, if you know, mom was in the car and it was tipped over burning, that kid is going to find a way to go smash his head through that windshield and get mom out. He's willing. At that point in time, he's got an extra level of motivation that makes him willing to do anything to get that job done. And I think every kid we got would go do that. Now, are they willing to, go to those extremes on Saturday in the fall or Wednesday at practice? Maybe not. But how do we show them that, you know, their goals are that important to them, where they're willing to, you know, not on that level, but you know, to a you know, physical level or willingness level to actually go out there and compete with everything they got. You know, I think it's a willingness, not so much a toughness. And if we can show them that that's what it takes and to meet their goals and get those experiences that they look forward to having in this game, they become, you know, and everybody else's eyes a whole lot tougher. And so I look at it more as a willingness, and our job as coaches to motivate those guys to, you know, play this game and work that hard in the off season, because what they want to get out of this game is on the line every day. And I think most guys respond, and the guys that don't, I think, you know, you find a way to really understand who's willing and who's not.
Yeah, I love that. And I agree with you 100%. I think by definition, if you are playing football today, you're tough, because it's not necessarily the cool thing to do if you're reading all the newspaper reports and whatever it might be. I mean, the game gets put under attack in so many different ways. So I think those guys, by definition, are tough. And I know part of us as coaches, like, we want to hold on to that tradition. But I think more than ever, we see the game evolving. And it's not the drill. I think we have to get that out of our head that people are taking things away from us. I think as coaches, we got to evolve too. What is it exactly we need out of these guys on game day, and how does that translate back to practice? And those, so to say that a drill created in 1965 is, you know, that being banned is taking away from our game, I think we're being a little bit silly in that. I understand, you know, why people are upset, but at the same time, like, I don't think we have to hang our hat on that particular drill or any drill.
Oh, no question. I think at one point in time, there weren't face masks on helmets, right. You know, and there were leather. And I'm sure as soon as somebody brought out a hard helmet for the first time, there was some uproar too. And so, you know, I think all the changes being made to the game are just going to prolong it and keep it safe. And that's all great. You know, I don't think you turn on the product every day. This is a physical, fast, aggressive game. That hasn't changed. You know, and I don't think us finding different ways to support it being safer, of course we should want to do that. You know, I don't think that has hurt our game at all.
Coach, in the bigger picture right now, being at South Dakota, what has you most excited about the culture that Coach is building there?
Well, I know when I looked at this job, we talked about the job. You know, the one thing, Coach Nielsen, you know, the head coach I'm working for right now, everywhere he's been, he's found a way to turn those programs around. And here, you know, some of the things that I think, you know, didn't allow South Dakota to be, you know, although there's been a lot of success here, to be, you know, nationally prominent. And I think that's one of the things I look for when I want to be a part of a program. Say that we get a chance to win a national title in this program, and he's done it and turned programs around everywhere he's been. And then what they're doing for him here, we got a $30 million renovation going on in our dome right now, $100 million athletic renovation that's happened in the last couple of years. And this place is really invested into players and student athletes and giving them a chance to be really successful. So when I knew that was happening right on the front end of an opportunity to be here with a guy like Coach Nielsen, there was no hesitation to jump on board. And, you know, there were some other opportunities, and I looked at this one and went, this is a no-brainer. Playing the best FCS league in the country, by far, you get a chance to prove it week in, week out. And now we've got a base to really recruit on. When kids come here, they look around and go, holy smokes. You know, I want to be here. And so, yeah, it's exciting. And you know, this place is special. And it's the university of the state, which is pretty cool. It's the flagship University of South Dakota. And, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Coach, let's dig into your defense a little bit and your philosophy. And you were featured in a Sports Illustrated article called The Search to Save NFL Defenses. And one of our guests last week has been on a couple times was Matt Drinkel. And Matt pointed to you as a guy to look to really understand where this game is evolving to and some of your thought processes there. And I guess thematically, it's around this idea of positionless defense or a bunch of hybrid types of guys. And if we were to look back, you know, let's say even 10 years ago, offenses and defenses were pretty well defined and fit into certain boxes, and you could pigeonhole them. They are this type of offense or this type of defense. And in terms of the tools that guys use, I mean, even if they're, let's say, a 21 personnel team, they still may be using some of those RPO tools or tempo tools or, you know, moving guys all over into different positions. And in a lot of ways, finding hybrid guys on offense who really put a stress on the defense. So to, I guess, play inside the box anymore becomes a little bit challenging and even limiting in terms of how you might run an offense or a defense at this point in the game. So give us a little bit of overview of, number one, you know, what were the main things you discussed in that article? And for our listeners, we'll link that Sports Illustrated article if you haven't seen it in our show notes. But talk to us, Coach, a little bit about, I guess, the whole idea behind that article and, you know, what you're sharing there.
Yeah, I think, you know, that was an interesting day. We talked about a lot of stuff that day, and it was really neat. Connor did a really good job with the article, and, you know, obviously, you guys and me do what you do as far as highlighting us, try to make it look a lot better than it is. But I think, you know, the conversations we had, it was really about, you know, the term kind of positionless defense is maybe a little crazy.
Yeah,
but,
right.
I think, it really came down to a conversation we had about, you know, and I sit back and look at defense, just developing athletes in general. And, you know, when you talk about defining the defense back in the day, even today, you know, you ask somebody, what are you? And they say, we're a 3-4. And that means something. That means something schematically. It means to a lot of guys, that's, you know, hey, you're in an Oki front. You got two outside backers that are the same body, and two inside backers, and your zero technique and how you're fitting it up. And you know, you're playing particular cover. I mean, that's what a 3-4 is in the mind of a lot of guys that grew up, you know, coaching this game in the last, you know, 15, 20 years. And so, you know, and what those players did, it didn't matter what type of athlete was doing it. This is how you're going to do it. And we're going to limit you to, you know, those specific techniques, even though you might be great at something else. And so, you know, the way I look at it, it's very similar to the way basketball is evolved. And you look back not that long ago, and every center, you know, they talk about, you know, you're a 1-5, and every five, you know, sat in the block and took the ball in the post and baby hooked or bodied guys in, and that's what they did. And the game, you know, was what it was. It's that type of game, and it's changed nowadays. You can't play that type of game and have a five that just backs down all the time. You know, those guys can shoot threes. They stand out in the corner and it allows other guys to be better at what they do. And that skill set didn't just happen overnight. Those guys, you know, in probably the 70s and 80s could have done the same thing, but nobody coached them to do that, allowed them to use that skill set and created that versatility, because that's just not what you did. Hey, we played a 4-1 and you stayed in the post and you were the screener all the time and you rolled to the bucket, and that's the way it is. And so football, I think, has been the same way. And so the way we look at it is we really want to develop every athlete to the maximum capacity of their skill set, and then how we marry that together in our defenses depends on what we have in the toolbox. And so, you know, we spend a lot of time with each guy, really understand them as an athlete, what they can really do, and then how we, you know, design our defenses really evolve around, you know, what we've got. And it allows us to teach from a technique standpoint first, and then schematically marry it together, you know, the way we need to defend teams. So that's kind of where that conversation, you know, and that term came from that day at least.
So in terms of that, when we think of this idea of hybrids playing the game, I guess as an extreme example, right? We could have that defensive end, really athletic defensive end, at least what looks like that on a diagram, right? And where he's lining up, fingers in the dirt, or up in the line of scrimmage in a two-point stance, blitzing and playing run on one play, and then the next play out playing, you know, man technique on a slot, you know, that. And certainly it takes a certain type of guy to do that, but you start to find more and more of these athletic players, and not saying that you necessarily make a living doing that, but how do you start to define what your guys can do and then fit it into a certain scheme without getting, I guess, crazy? Because at some point there's still some kind of overriding philosophy and structure that you do have to put together to teach these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we start with a base of what we want to do, what we think schematically is going to be best to defend our schedule. And then, you know, from that point, you know, we'll revert back and say, here's the group of techniques it takes to, you know, be proficient in that system. And does that marry with, you know, our best 11 football players? Sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, sometimes, you know, what you want to do is going to be great 7 weeks of the year from just a kind of a base standpoint. And that's not going to be for three others. And in those three others, who are your best 11 in that scenario? And, you know, can you work around the actual techniques it takes to play in those schemes around those sort of thoughts? And, you know, I never forget watching years ago when Everson Griffin first got in the league out of USC. He was playing for Minnesota, and they lined him up before he was actually playing on defense. He was a punt return gunner. He'd go line up as a punt gunner. He'd go cover punts out at the X with two guys trying to double him, and nobody could do it. And because he ran well, he's super athletic. Obviously, everybody sees what he's doing now, you know, now that he's developed into a better defensive player. But he always had the skill set to be that athletic, and he was overly physical. And next thing you know, here's a guy running down covering punts out at the X, not, you know, in there protecting first. And so I remember thinking at that point, like, why isn't there more of this happening? And so what we do is just, you know, try and find, you know, with the techniques, you know, we're good at coaching and we know are going to fit into our schemes, you know, identify guys that we think, you know, with a pretty wide scope can do that and give them a chance to do it. And, you know, in the spring and in the summer, and then from there, you know, we've kind of got an idea of guys that can do all that, who can be available in each package, in each position, and how deep we can, you know, it allows us to be deeper sometimes if we limit packages using different guys. And, you know, it comes down to teaching techniques first, you know, not saying we want to run this like this, to how many guys can do this and did that fit on the depth chart, you know, and if we need to do that with a number of other calls, who can do this group, who can perform this group of techniques, and then see how that falls into an actual game plan or a scheme or the way it looks on paper. So how to identify it? I think it's, you know, it's a lot of work and it takes time, but, you know, I think you find out, you know, which one of those guys can do things early in their career at a really vanilla level or not, you know, they're not ready to play on a game day, but you see some guys and go, geez, I think in a couple of years, that guy could really develop into, you know, playing that technique well, and you continue to nurture it.
Coach, taking a step back in terms of recruiting now and thinking of defense this way, that, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be the guy who fits this exact, you know, round peg in a square hole. Has it changed the way you look at players in the recruiting process as far as what they might be able to do for you if you bring them in?
For sure. I think, you know, every guy we look at, I talk about, you know, you look at it as a transition always. You know, I think a lot of times you want to take, I'm just speaking offensively, you want to take that tight end and you want to find the 6'5", you know, 240-pound guy that can run, catch it, do all those things great, you know, that have all the football end of things first and that body type. And a lot of times those guys, you know, there's a million places snatching them up before they get to us at all, every level, you know, with the exception of about, 10 teams in the country, you don't just go and get your pick. And so you've got to find, you know, in my opinion, you got to find transitional guys. And so, you know, we look at some of our players, we say, hey, what could he do well as a freshman? Can this guy help us? You think he can, what are the techniques he could do with this body type right now? And then how do we feel like his body's going to grow, his physical attributes will change in that time? And then how will that transition? And one, it allows us to think about it from a, you know, you may change positions, quote unquote, on the depth chart as you go along, but you build skill sets from the time you're a freshman to your senior, and it lets us provide ourselves with a little more depth where, hey, we feel like this guy can help us early in a limited capacity while he develops his body and his mind around the game into more full-time capacity. And so we don't want to think of guys for, you know, just what they are now or what they could be, but how that process is going to go and where we can fit them in along the way. And so, yeah, there is a lot of, you know, when you take a recruit and you say, what's this guy going to be? We want that player to help us and help this football team as early as possible. And we want to find guys that can help us maybe in a different way than it might look like his junior and senior year, if possible. So, yeah, I think the way we look at it might be a little different, but it's always worked well.
I know you stated that the fundamentals are a big part of this, and teaching each guy a base of fundamentals that they're going to use and repping those things over and over. When you get into the season, you get into the game week, and you're faced with different offensive systems coming at you, different ways they're trying to attack you, put defenders in conflict, etc. How do you treat practice in terms of, and let's use the example of taking a corner, for example, a guy usually playing out on the edge, and maybe you get into a dime package, and now that corner's on a slot, now playing in a different space. For you, how are you orchestrating that idea of guys maybe not just being in that traditional, you know, cornerback position or defensive end position or whatever it might be over the course of the week to get them ready for game day?
Yeah, so that exact scenario happened to us just in the 2018 season at Grandview. We had majored in, you know, let's talk quote-unquote personnel-wise on the field. We had been a 3-4 team. Another year we had four hands downs, a 4-3 looking team. And then we, you know, a couple things happened. One, there were a couple teams, you know, one team in particular, we weren't able to defend as well as we wanted to. The team we felt like we needed to beat to get over the hump, you know, to get ourselves a home playoff game as opposed to playing on the road. And it was important to us. And so, you know, we had talked about some of the techniques we may play, you know, around that one team. And it had our corners, you know, pressed in the slot, you know, playing a couple different techniques in the slot, and then, you know, trapping off of that look and being involved in the run fit. And so during the, you know, summer and spring and fall camp, we, you know, we had our corners doing some of those things and working those techniques. We had a couple of backup safeties that were similar body types that could, you know, play some assisted man in the slot. So we allowed them to play the techniques when they were supported by a safety, you know, in one capacity or another, or bracketed corner. And then, you know, we're stout enough to trap and, you know, fit on a, you know, box, a puller or plan an H-back or things like that. And so they've been, you know, playing some of the techniques, but we jumped into the schedule doing, you know, some of the things we had done the year before. And, you know, we were reduced up front and had kind of that weak outside backers, you know, playing at the line of scrimmage a lot. And then, you know, we kind of went into it and didn't play as well as we wanted to the first week. And then, you know, said, hey, I think we got to do some things different. You know, with a very different team. We went from playing a 21-22 personnel multi-shift pro style team into a 10 personnel high tempo RPO based team. And we knew what we kind of wanted to do going into that game. And so we took our corner and a backup safety and put dime on the field the entire game and had a really nice day, six turnovers and really played well. against that group and held them to as low a point total as they had in the last however many years combined. And so we kind of went, why would we, these are our best 11 guys. Can we do this more than just in 10 personnel or some of the things? And it kind of took on a life of its own. We played in a 3-2-6 personnel defense for really the remainder of the year, with the exception of, 21 and 22 sets where we, obviously had the sevens of different type of guys, but our corners went into that, or essentially our nickel and dime player went into that, game, or into more game plans throughout the season, not necessarily ready to play a conceptual defense, but they knew the techniques that we were asking them to play. And it just became a matter of when to play them. And could we teach on that level? Like, hey, in this look, we want you to play this technique. And it becomes really simple to guys, as opposed to teaching them the call, and they associate that call with the technique. Then it's harder to teach, in my opinion. So we were able to be pretty versatile, jump into game plans, be a little different week to week. But technically, the guys are playing the same stuff. They mastered those techniques against those looks. And so, yeah, I mean, we ran into that issue this year, and not really an issue. It allowed us to get our best players in the field, because we were prepared technically.
I know the Sports Illustrated article characterized this as you're reinventing the defense every week. And I think that's a far distinction, though, from saying you're like a flavor of the week guy, right? Because as I'm hearing you talk about this, the consistency comes in. You've taught these guys to master skill sets. You've taught them to master fundamentals and techniques. I would imagine, Coach, that this is the stuff that gets installed in the spring and then in summer camp before you even head into the season. So it's not like you're taking a guy and saying, hey, guess what you're going to do this week? And he's got no clue, and it's new teaching. That this is something for you, that there is a progression. There is a system of teaching this to your guys.
No question. This certainly isn't throw it up against the wall and see what sticks. We're going to teach, the things that they, at a high level, what they need to play, the looks they're going to see running that technique. What I think has been overrated over the years is how the amount of understanding they have to have and how they all marry together. I think that's a little bit bailing out on your responsibility as a coach, where the guy that has to understand how they all marry together is me and our staff, and making sure that when we marry these techniques together, whether that's, from one week to another or from one season to another, that it's sound, it's fundamentally sound, technically sound, that we deal in all the nuance, however long that takes, to make sure when we ask kids to do things, we ask our guys to go and execute those techniques, that when they're all put together, that it's schematically sound. And, how we do that, how quickly we feel like we can do that, that's just a matter of game planning and marrying those techniques together. I'm not afraid to completely change the alignment and technique a guy plays mid-game, if need be. And the thing is, it makes it really easy to adjust. I mean, our guys will, hey, in this call, we just, instead of running this, we need you to execute this technique from this alignment. And they're able to do that. It helps us, adjust a little easier that way. And so, no, this isn't, we don't say, well, we're going to have you do something you've never done before week two mid-game. That will never happen.
Coach, a lot of what we do in our sport, I think, as people hear about it, gets lost in translation. It's like the telephone game, right? You tell somebody one thing here, and then by the time it's to somebody else, they have a complete misunderstanding of what was originally said. So the idea of, and again, if I'm just looking at some articles written, well, this guy plays a 3-3 and a 4-3 and a 4-2-5, and like, that's not necessarily it, right? I would think that a coach can't go out with that idea that he's taken a bunch of systems and grab pieces from here and there. All of this starts with a structure. For you, I think at least the Sports Illustrated article said it's a pretty thin playbook, but it allows you to have a teaching structure to start from. So while you may appear to be very multiple in your fronts, this all fits together within a system. And again, probably as I'm hearing you talk, a lot of this then goes to the fundamentals and the techniques.
Yeah, I think it just comes back to your initial question. The first topic we kind of talked about was you define each defense. So when you look out there and there's, you know, essentially a 3-3-5 personnel or a 3-2-6 personnel or a 3-4 personnel, you associate that with a whole bunch of rules and another defense and all that, and we don't. And if there's another group of guys out there, you know, how we're marrying techniques together might be very, very similar. That extra linebacker might in our eyes be the 3 technique, and he's going to, you know, pressure through the outside shoulder of the guard. And if he pulls, he's going to work this way, and his keys will be very similar to that 3 techniques, but he's doing it from off the ball. And, that's just kind of a vanilla idea. And so even though there's structure, it looks a little different, you know, in our head, you know, he's just playing a different technique than maybe a, you know, a similar position in a different scheme. And so, yeah, I think in football, obviously right now, impression's a lot of it. You know, what a team's looking at when they want to attack you as a defense, and how can we take advantage of creating an impression that, you know, might make you think we're something different than we are. I think everybody's trying to do that. You know, you send 21 personnel as an offense and teams aren't empty. And so if you take too much stock in those sort of things, I mean, obviously those are the things you can manipulate to, you know, throw a game plan off. And we're trying to, you know, do that defensively and be on the front end of that, not, you know, find out, have them surprised. And hopefully, you know, as we do that, we can shrink game plans and make guys, you know, reduce their playbook down to a manageable position where we don't feel like we're getting attacked with the whole thing week after week. And so, you know, again, it's not, you know, this amoeba sort of crazy pressure filled defense. It's a, you know, I think we take a lot of time to marry just different techniques and win and nuance more than, you know, these elaborate things that look good from the stand sometimes.
Coach, if I were to ask you to give, you know, coaches out there listening just a few simple steps to get started, maybe if they like this kind of philosophy, to get started with where they're at right now, to be able to have something that does have this kind of flexibility and presents to offenses in different ways. What are a few steps you'd give them to get started with this?
You know, the first thing I do is I take, you know, who are my 11 best players and write it down 1 to 11, and don't think positionally, don't think any of us, who are my best 11? And then what is the best thing to do to beat, you know, the majority of teams on my schedule? And can those 11 guys do that? And with what I know and what I've taught, if they can't do that, you know, where do 9 of them fit in? And how do I make the other 2 fit in for what we can't, what we're lacking? And I think putting that puzzle together, you know, to allow your best 11 guys to be out there as many downs as possible gives you the best chance to win regardless of what you're doing. And so, you know, I think that's kind of where it all came down to is – you know, hey, I only got 1 defensive end. That's part of that 11. You know, I got an extra guy who's more of a linebacker type. How can I make him play the other defensive end? You know, that's how the 3-4 kind of reduced front started. And so, you know, he's playing a different sort of techniques than your standard D end would play. It's our job as coaches to figure out unique ways to get that job done. And I think, you know, finding a way to essentially jam that square peg in the round hole with your best 11 guys, you know, gets your mind going a little bit on, you know, how to get those guys out there without just, you know, succumbing to the rules of everybody else's, you know, 3-4, 4-3, 4-2-5 rules.
Coach, I appreciate you sharing all these ideas about how you think about the game and really ideas on how the game is evolving. But if I were to ask you, Coach, with all the things you do, whether that's the stuff you're doing to build your units or the different schemes you're able to put them in, what is the one thing you do that you feel really gives your defensive unit, your guys, the winning edge?
I think you just got to remember these guys are people. And, you know, I think, again, going back to the willingness and motivation that gets your guys playing harder than anybody else's, you know, playing tougher, more competitive than anybody else's. And I think, you know, I think a lot of times at our level and any level, any coach, and sometimes you get lost in forgetting the fact that those guys look at you as a coach, as a mentor, as somebody that's invest in their life. And if they know you're really doing that and you truly are, I think those guys will absolutely run through a wall for you. And not that that's the end all be all, but they want these experiences and that's what it takes. And so I think making sure that, you know, with all the X's and O's and schematics and techniques, that you never, you know, lose sight of the most important thing. These guys are people, and that you can, you know, really have a huge influence on them positively or negatively or not at all. And I think when you get caught in too much of the, you know, football end of things, you don't get the intangibles out of those guys. And that's what makes the engine really rev, is all that looks good, but how are they doing it? Well, I think that has a lot to do with the sort of relationship you have with the players. And I think finding different ways to have, you know, all of your staff involved with coaching them and having relationships with all of your players, not getting so stuck into position groups and, you know, treating this as a people's game, I think has always given us, you know, a little bit more of an edge sometimes. And I don't know, I think a lot of guys do it a lot of different ways very, very well. I just think, it, you know, we found a way to motivate our guys from a personal level sometimes that gets them pretty invested in what we're doing.
Coach, what's the best way for our listeners to connect with you and follow what you guys are doing at South Dakota?
Yeah, I think, you know, following us on Twitter, I don't even know what our Twitter handle is for a team, you know, but South Dakota University Coyotes, you know, usdcoyotes.com. You know, you can follow me on Twitter, Coach T. Johansson, and send me a message anytime. I'll do my best to get back to anybody possible. And, you know, if there's things that, you know, interest them, do my absolute best to help guys out in any way.
Well, Coach, I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing your ideas here today. Best of luck to you and the Coyotes in 2019.
Appreciate it, Keith. Awesome talking to you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please check out all we're doing on Twitter at our Twitter handle for coaches at FBDEVCoach. Check out our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling at footballdevelopment.com. If you register there with your email address, you can get access to our shoulder tackle system, the entire system, as well as 3 free videos of your choice, either from advanced tackling or from our contact system, which is blocking and defeating blocks. This is some of the best stuff, some cutting edge stuff, I think, that you're going to find is very efficient and effective in the way you teach your players. And there's a lot of drills here that help you improve that skill year round. Check it out at footballdevelopment.com. Check out our coaches notes on usafootball.com. Go to the resources tab for development and training. Our coaches notes are given to us by coaches around the country, state champs, some of the NCAA leaders. Those guys have been doing a great job in putting that together in our tips format, which is teach, install, and problem solve. And in there, we also have further review, which we allow our clips to be downloadable, and you can download those and put them into your Huddle. No need for an extra subscription to a Huddle page. So check those out. And as always, go to blogs.usafootball.com for our show notes, our analysis articles, and coach. Finally, if you're enjoying the podcast, head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. It really helps out the podcast.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.